So we're officially that time of year, and anybody who has children will know about that time of year. It is, I mean, they've been back to school for a while now, right? In the UK, we're coming up to half term, but bugs, any kind of bugs, they get it, they have it, they spread it. And you know, my twins are so different. They're so different to the point that they don't even get it at the same time. So you'd think another good thing maybe about twins is they get the kind of the cold bug or the time, whatever bug it is, same time, deal with it. No. I get one back. Today, it's been like, I take one in, bring one back, take one in. We even got to the school gates, they brought one back. I keep ringing the school saying, I'm really sorry. They're like, which one don't we have today?
just wait and see. Whichever one turns up, just surprise! Teach that one.
And they're not identical, so you're going to know which one you've got. So yeah, we're officially, I think I'm getting a little bit of it off the back of it all, but it's officially, you know, it's that time of year, isn't it? Seasons changing, weather's changing, bugs
but
are everywhere.
It's annoying, that concertina effect in the house, though, isn't it? I think it's better if you just all have it together and just get it done. It's so annoying. It was the same here. You know, my son had it, and then I had it, and now Ben's got it. And it's just like, oh, God, it's dragging on for 2 weeks.
I'm like, which one? And I've got one who's very stoic. I've got one who will go in, whatever's going on, he'll just brave it, and he'll run through a brick wall. I've got another one, at the slightest thing, he's like, right, I don't know. Can't possibly go to school today. So today it was the stoic one. So I kind of knew as we were walking, I had to really kind of probe him a little bit that he wasn't right. So I've even got that kind of, so yeah, so we're going to get that sorted out. So it's bug time of it, but it's quite good because I've had a few weeks of downtime. So at least I'm here to deal with the bugs and get everyone back on track. But it's finally getting cold in the UK as well.
There's
been some fog, there's been some mist, and the good news, this is a news you look forward to every year, I have reserved my Christmas tree.
Oh, good. We're going to have to get one. Oh, no, we're not going to be able to get one this year.
Why not?
Oh, no.
Why?
Is it not going to have to wait another year?
Why?
Oh, because we're having renovation works,
and?
Not the whole thing, but we're getting plenty of it done. But it finishes, well, I'll have to look. Do you know what? I haven't actually thought about it, but the renovation finishes on, like, genuinely on the 23rd, so maybe the 24th actually of December. So we'll have to see. Have to see what I can do. I'll do something. Maybe I'll get a small one, but I'll do something.
Just do it a little. Yeah, mine was reserved. I suddenly panicked. Someone said, "Oh, they're selling out," and obviously I bought into that and put the deposit down. And the tree is booked, and it's still October. And I'm not even going to talk about Halloween. I'm going to talk about tennis because it continues. We've got finals, ATP and WTA finals to sort themselves out. One thing I was wondering, as a professional, do you, every year, every season, is there a reason for doing what you're doing? Do you see what I mean? So do you...
What?
You're not just playing because you love it, right? So do you go into a season and it's like, I want to be top 200, 100, 50, next gen? Is there always a goal?
Yeah.
Or... Okay, so then my next question, and it's not a leading question. I've just been wondering this lately. What do you, and I know you've been following him this week, but with Andy Murray, what is Murray's goal now? Because we see some frustrating times when he's not where he was. We see some flashes of brilliance. What do you think, or do you know, what do you think the goal now is for Murray in terms of what he wants to achieve, having achieved so much?
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be pretty resilient now, body-wise, doesn't he? Playing week in, week out, had a nice full season, all in all, has won back-to-back matches, five setters, he's had it all. So really, the body's holding up fairly nicely. It's now just about the game pushing on. Yes, I'm following him in Gijon. And I don't know, I think it is a little more difficult to work out what people's goals are later in their career. I think for everybody, you can understand that Djokovic and Nadal have the drive of slams, and that's what they're reaching for. But even that is they've got a lot of them, you know. So is it, I don't know. But for Andy, I mean, he's back in the top 50. Which is extraordinary, really. And it feels like he's playing better than that. I think he's looking for a big push at the end of this year just to boost that ranking somewhat. What's difficult is that When you're outside sort of 30-ish, maybe 40, if you're outside 40, between 40 and 80, players do tend to bounce around a lot because it's just so draw dependent. You're not seeded in most of these tournaments. I mean, it's you might squeeze a seed in a 250 if you're ranked about 40, but, you know, really it's, yeah, really it's a bit more difficult. There's a lot more luck involved. So the ranking doesn't necessarily reflect, I think, how players are playing. But Andy's now inside 50. He was a wild card, unseeded in this tournament, but he's taken out big seed in Davidovich Fokina. I think it's just about seeing, isn't it? It's testing his body. It's seeing what he can do. I think that his goal is to probably get, I would assume, it's just a very obvious goal that is a very common goal, would be to be seeded in slams. So 32. I think he's currently at about 49. But as I say, he's playing much higher than that. I think he is playing like a top 30 player. But just getting those consistent results, once if you're seeded, it's just a little bit easier. You just don't know who you're going to draw. So I don't know. That would be my guess. But I don't know. I don't know if he's actually said what his goals are for the season. Maybe he sort of bats it away with being physically healthy, enjoying competing and those sorts of things. But ranking wise, I'd say that.
But I just wonder if it's, and we know he has this love of the game. He's spoken in the past. He loves every part of the game. But I just wonder, it takes so much to do what he does in terms of physically, mentally, the family, everything that goes with being on the tour. And I just wonder if I don't know what it is that, what is the continual drive for Andy Murray? I think that's it. As you touched on with Djokovic, he's still winning slams and he's still got these records to go for, as is Nadal. I just wonder if, you know, I'm not trying to retire him. I wouldn't dare say those words on this podcast in front of you, but just, I don't know. I just wonder what the end game is for Murray. Is it just to see what his body can do? And is that enough for him? Is it the love of the game? Is it? I don't know. It just like watching him at the Laver Cup, and that was a little bit frustrating. He's getting some results here. I don't know. I was just curious as to, from getting into the mind of a professional sports person, as you are and as you were on tour, if there has to be a certain drive, or it can simply just be for love of the game.
I think it's a combination. He definitely has a love of the game, and I mean, he's had every opportunity to stop. He's had the world telling him to stop, the universe telling him to stop, his body telling him to stop. And I think everybody else saying, why isn't he stopping? So it has been sort of overwhelming for him. So I think that he clearly does love to compete. And we know, you just look at how competitive he is. And sometimes you just think, I mean, he's roaring away. And, you know, and it's against somebody ranked like 120 in a challenger or something. But he is, that's who he is. He loves to compete. And I think there are those moments that it's very difficult to walk away from. And I think we saw that from him at Wimbledon, the support that he gets there with the crowd. I mean, that feeling, it's like a drug. I think lots of people say that, to have that sort of recognition. And you will not have that afterwards, unless you go and do a lovely South American tour like Roger Federer. He can keep it coming until he's 60. But for Andy and for most people, it's not really possible. Once you walk away, you're just not going to get that again. You might get a crowd if you go and do a speech or whatever. You're going to get nice reactions, of course. He's wildly popular. But I think, yeah, he has talked a lot about the moments, and he said, you know, people say, question why I'm still doing this. And then, you know, look at centre court on their feet and the feelings. And, you know, we're lucky enough to sit there and feel that atmosphere and hear the noise. And so you can understand that, but there aren't that many moments through the year where you get that. It is quite few. The majority of it is coming to Gijon. But he still pulls in a decent crowd here at the 250, and that's your sort of bread and butter. And I think that's probably where we are going to see some more gains from him with his ranking. I think really the goal for him is probably, I think if you flip it on its head, it's not about what to achieve. It's probably more about that he will only walk away when he feels like he has done everything he can. Every single stone unturned, then he will walk away. You know, probably like Federer. I mean, Jesus, he clung on for so long, didn't he? He was desperately trying to come back. He even talked about coming back when we saw him at Wimbledon, but the knee, you know, things just were not playing ball for him. So I think it's probably just, I've got a lot of life to live after tennis. I'm sure he's very excited about that. He's got a wonderful family that, you know, he absolutely adores. So, I think maybe he just wants to make sure. And then every few months he's sort of achieving a bit more, and he's sort of thinking, oh, okay, hang on a minute, now I can play consistently, now I can do this, and it's just going to keep him going a little while.
Other end of the career spectrum, but just keep the British theme going, Emma Raducanu back in the news. Actually, I'm not sure she's ever out of the news, saying she's back in the news.
Not here, not in the UK. I know we've got a lot of international listeners, but in the UK she is not out of the news.
She isn't, is she?
Every week
there's something.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely huge. She's a phenomenon.
But this was very completely 100% tennis-based, the latest news. Dmitry Tursunov, we believe, made the decision to part ways. And the other thing alongside this was Jez Green, who worked with Andy Murray for a long time, Sasha Zverev most recently. I think he's still working with Dominic Thiem, has been working with Emma Raducanu. And that's something we've talked about together on the pod. Lots of people have written articles about the fitness side of things, which I think alerted a lot of people when they saw the name of Jez Green alongside Emma Raducanu.
Yeah, well, Jez, incredibly experienced, did a fantastic job with Andy Murray and then with Alexander Zverev, two very different characters, very different sort of athletes on the court as well, and really adapted his style, I think, between the two of them. Just hugely experienced. He's also, in between things, he's such a prominent figure within British tennis, of course. He's so respected. Yep. And, you know, it is the sort of thing that, you know, he is sort of around, especially if, you know, he would be in between jobs. He hasn't really. He's sort of just been on the tour for a while. But since he stopped working with Zverev, you know, he is around, he is involved. And, it can only be a good thing getting somebody that experienced on the physical side for Emma. You know, we've seen her rolling through quite a few coaches. Maybe the answers lie elsewhere, considering that, you know, you can't learn to play on the tour if you can't play every match. You know, you need to lose the tight ones. You need to come back from down. You need to fight through the niggles. You need all of that. It builds your resilience. It builds your confidence in any different situation that you can come through. And also, you just get more opportunities to play so that you can play more. You just need a high volume of matches to learn how it works. So if that is going to improve that, and I'm sure that Jez will do a fantastic job, then, you know, hopefully that means that she can just be on court and be more often, more weeks, more tournaments, and playing these back-to-back matches without starting to really struggle. So yeah, then she'll be able to learn about the tour. And coaches are brilliant and they're very necessary. However, especially tennis players with a high tennis IQ like Emma Raducanu, no one teaches you more than your opponent. That's it. They teach you more than anybody else. They will tell you when it's not good enough because they will slam it away for a winner. You know, they teach you about the momentum. Oh, dear. They teach you about the momentum in matches. We had a long day yesterday in Gijon. It was really long, guys. Very good. They were really good matches, but it was very long. But they teach you about the momentum, the energy, and all these sorts of things that really it is difficult to grasp if you haven't actually played and you haven't been in it. So I think that that's what she needs, is really to just play, keep playing, play more, be able to last in events and not withdraw.
You said that coaches are important and necessary. There are some exceptions who don't have a coach. It is the norm to have a coach. And when you don't have a coach, all the questions are about, why do you not have a coach? Could you see her? Does she need a coach? You talk about learning from your opponents, her IQ, her father's involved, she's got voices coming in. Is there a situation now at her age, what, is she 20 now, that she doesn't have a coach? Or do you feel she needs that constant presence with her on tour?
It's a really good question. And it's difficult to know, of course. I'm not super close to the family at the moment. But you've just got to look at when she won the US Open. Yes, she had a coach in Andrew Richardson who did a fantastic job. And you cannot underestimate how difficult it would be to try and manage the player in that sort of situation. However, he had only been working with her for a few weeks. He was basically employed to just do the US Open stint and just sort of, can you come with me and be a companion and help me out with scouting and, you know, make sure my rackets are strong and book some practice courts and do all the stuff that coaches do.
Worked out well, didn't it?
Outside of things. And she went and won the US Open. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So I'm not saying she did it on her own, Andrew Richardson played a very, very important part. The part of a facilitator, which is really difficult to do. Do not get me wrong, a highly skilled position. But she didn't have a coach in terms of... I don't think that you can sort of... It's a difficult situation, isn't it? She didn't do it on her own, as I was saying, but she didn't do it with a team that she'd been working with for years who had all been building to this position. So, and I think also just with the way that we see her cycle through coaches, I think that just suits her better. I think she just knows what she's doing. She's in charge of her team. And it's always a funny thing, I think, particularly on the WTA Tour, but also on the men's as well, is who is driving the team. Because we often see that it's coaches driving the team. And really, the real success comes when it's the player driving the team. That's it. And the coach has their role and they are in charge of certain elements. But really, it's the player saying to the coach, right, I need to know about this. What about this? What does, if it's about scouting of your next opponent, what do they do here? When they're 15:30, where do they serve? What do they, you know, as in, that's got to come from the player. We do see a lot, and it does tend to be a bit more common on the women's tour, and I don't like it, is especially when we had coaching, on-court coaching back in the day, where girls would sit there, or women would sit there at the change of ends, and they would not say anything and just be spoken at. And it's just not the way to get the best out of yourself. You know, you need to be driving it. There are always going to be times in your career where motivation drops down, but ultimately, she's clearly the driving force. She's the one sorting it out. She's going to make tons of mistakes. So does everyone. Absolutely everyone. So would a coach if they were in charge, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. It's a difficult one to answer whether she should have a coach or not.
Well, we'll see how that one plays out. But Dmitry Tursunov, we believe he's taken up working with a player who is, I think, near to where he's based in California. And so they have parted ways. And we shall wait and see. Someone she couldn't have, even if she wanted to, is Patrick Mouratoglou, because that man does not stop. Does he? I mean, he can't be without a player for more than about a week, and then he gets itchy feet, and then he gets another player.
Yeah, because he has this setup, because he has his academy, and loads of pro players train there, or have come through there, you know, Tsitsipas, obviously Holger Rune, who he's now training with, and anybody that he starts working with then sort of becomes part of the Mouratoglou Academy. He has loads of players that he is always touching base with. You know, he has. We see him in Tsitsipas's box often. He, you know, ever since he was young, he's always sort of been involved trying to help him, even though he was coaching Serena and that was his full-time job. So it's not like he's just sort of plucked Holger Rune out of thin air. Rune trains at Mouratoglou Academy and has done for a long time. And Patrick knows him very well, and I'm sure has been on court with him plenty of times. So yeah, if you have your player out for a long amount of time, I can.
And I'm not being cynical here. I mean, we know he said it's because we know Simona Halep is taking a little bit of time. That a lot has gone on for Halep this year, on court, off court, and underwent a little bit of surgery, so she's taking time to recover before she comes back. But the cynical part of me says that Patrick Mouratoglou, he has his academy, which is very popular and busy, still needs to be promoted, that he needs to be in the shop window. Is that too cynical? He needs to be around or with a player. So he could have easily, Simona Halep's taking time to recover, he could have said, right, I'll just focus on the academy. But you feel, do you know what I mean? He doesn't like to be away from the spotlight for too long, doesn't want people to possibly forget about him.
I think there might be an element of that. I think it's a little bit cynical. I think that, you know, it is an incredibly difficult lifestyle being a tour coach. Really, really tough. It is, you know, the tour is brutal. It never ends. It's week in, week out. And Patrick has always done it pretty fully. He's always been fully committed. And I think a lot of it is just coaches don't like not being on tour. I think they like being out on the circuit. That's what they do. It's what they know. And as I say, just even the lifestyle of just traveling around and being a bit of a nomad is, I think it takes a specific sort of person. And the people who love it, they love it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price.
go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now we've got a couple of finals coming up. There's the ATP finals, before that the WTA finals. I was just looking at the San Diego draw for the WTA event, and I was looking at the matches yesterday, and boy, you had Świątek winning match number 61 of the year. 61 against Zheng, 3 sets. You had Coco Gauff coming through against Bianca Andreescu. 3 sets. 2 hours, 31 minutes. Madison Keys coming through against Daria Kasatkina. Sabalenka coming through against Stevens in 3 sets. And then it was fairly straightforward for Paula Badosa. And A, that is a stacked draw and a stacked tournament. But B, some of those matchups, if all these players can stay healthy, these are exciting times in WTA.
It is, very exciting. I mean, there's the fight on, isn't there? The scrap for the last few places for the WTA Tour and Tour Finals. And they're going to be held in Dallas, and this is San Diego. So everybody's turning up, really, to feel good. You're playing on the same continent and pick up as many points as possible. It's, it's just some really great tennis going on,
lovely,
I think, everywhere. But, yeah, the women's game, incredibly healthy. It'll be interesting to see who snatches those last few places. Could they do a Caroline Garcia of years gone by? Flying. Who could? I don't know who the last possible
I've got it. So,
so
as we speak, this is Friday the 14th. We've got confirmed Świątek, Jabeur, who just missed out Jabeur last year, and Jessica Pegula in. They are three in. Now, yeah. the runners and riders behind, as again, this is as we speak, in the morning of the Friday, Gauff, Garcia, Kasatkina, Sabalenka, Kudermetova, Sakkarin. Sakkari is, I don't know what's happening. I don't know if it's the pressure. I don't know if it's tiredness, but she's really dropped off. Bencic and Keys. They are the players in the running to make the finals.
Okay, so it stops at Keys.
I think so, around that. Oh. I mean, you could, yeah, okay. I think pretty much if you look at who can get there and who can get what. I mean, that's pretty stacked. So they're trying to grab as many places in tournaments, as many points as they can to try and get in there. Because as we've talked about, there's a big purse for the winner. There's a lot of prestige. And to be in the tour finals, I mean, this is, I think it's, but Sakkari's really, I don't know, you get it, don't you? Shapovalov had this in his early few seasons when he just got tired. He got to the stage of the season and the results just weren't there. And Sakkari's just has dropped off. It feels like maybe she just does need a little bit of a break, because it has been a long season, right?
Yeah, I know, and you really do feel that, and the opportunity for players ranked a little bit lower, like we saw with Caroline Garcia coming through and winning, that she won Beijing and Wuhan back to back, didn't she? Which were huge tournaments and secured her place in the finals. And then did she make the semis or something? I can't remember. No, that was Kuznetsova who did that. I can't remember. Anyway, it was. Yeah, it's always nice to have it come down to the wire and to have these big tournaments, because it's a Guadalajara next, which is a Masters equivalent. It's a WTA 1000. Yeah. So absolutely huge points in Guadalajara. And I think we could see somebody just streak on through. I don't know who it's going to be. As I say, I'm not sure about Sakkari, because she's just clinging on, isn't she, really?
Well, the order, so we've got the three. So four downwards, Gauff, Sabalenka, Garcia, Kasatkina, Halep, we know season over. Then it's Kudermetova, Sakkari, Badosa, Bencic, Keys and Collins. So I think, I mean, possibly Collins. I mean, she's 14th in this, but with an outside chance of possibly, I mean, she'd have to go on one hell of a run, but it probably stops down at Collins.
But she could just win everything.
She could.
She could just win it. She could win San Diego and win Guadalajara. I mean, the time people are listening to this, she's probably lost in her quarterfinals of
Yeah.
But hey, let's have faith for now. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to pick. It's up for grabs, isn't it? I think, you've got as I say, Gauff, Sabalenka, they look like shoo-ins, really, don't they? And I think Garcia might have done enough, but the last couple of spots, I think they will change.
I'd love to see Kasatkina, because Kasatkina had a few years in the wilderness, and it's great seeing her back playing like she's been playing. I'd love to see her qualify for the finals.
Yeah, it would be great, wouldn't it? It would be very cool. I'd also like to see, we've already got a couple of Americans in with Pegula and, I mean, almost certainly Coco Gauff. But it would be nice to see one of the Americans just go on a run sort of in San Diego take the title there. But yeah, I don't know. But Świątek's still playing. I mean, she won't leave him alone. That's the thing, is they need all these points. And they're like, look, Iga, why don't you just rest until the tour finals? We'll sort out who else is going to be there and we'll see you in Dallas.
I'm back in that place when I can't see past her winning it. I know it's stacked and we've talked about the competition and how wonderful everyone is and it's great, but I'm back to the cannot see past Świątek for winning the thing.
I commentated on Ostrava where she was. She lost in the final to Krejcikova in one of the best finals I think we've had all year. Possibly the best. I don't know. It was absolutely incredible. I loved it so much. And it had everything because we were right at the Polish border in Ostrava. So there was probably more Polish fans in than Czech fans, even though Ostrava is in the Czech Republic. And you had a Czech against a Pole in the final. It was Świątek. It was Krejcikova playing so, so well
That's good.
So it was, it was so much fun. You had sort of the right court speed to really make for great tennis as well. It just, we had it all. And I just had an absolute blast that tournament. I just didn't do a bad match at all. Everything was amazing. But Świątek, yeah, it was a fascinating final, actually, to see. I don't think she played that well. And I think that everybody else can only beat her if she's not at her best. She has to be sort of at like a 7 out of 10 minimum for anybody to really have a chance. And she wasn't quite at her best. She was fighting. Oh, my word, was she making it incredibly difficult for Krejcikova to get over the line. And it was one of those things where it almost was more of a statement than winning because it was more sort of like, actually, that's what it takes to beat her. And it was a horrendously hard effort. I mean, Krejcikova did phenomenally well to be able to do that. But physically, just mentally, she was so good. And at the end, it was really interesting. She was crying. She was very emotional. And I was thinking, and I know it's awful, but it's just because we're putting her in that category now of the very, very top. I don't think you would have ever seen Serena crying over a small event like Ostrava. But I think what it was is that it meant so much to her because all of the Poles were there supporting her. You pretty much could have just split the stadium half and half. It was that. It was like a Fed Cup match or Billie Jean King Cup match. It was so, so cool. But she wasn't playing brilliantly well. But it still requires a huge effort for people to beat her. And it has to be a very, very good match from her opponents. But yeah, she's not the same player that we saw when she was absolutely dominating. But yeah, I mean, look, she lost in a final. So we're like, oh, she's done. No, she's not. She's not. And I agree with you. I can't really see past her. But as I say, she's not at her devastating best. You know, all of her matches in Ostrava were quite tight. I think the most comfortable set she won, I believe, was 6-4. So it was, she was pushed. You know, gone are the days of the 2-1s, Iga's Bakery. We're not seeing much of Iga's Bakery anymore. And it means that players are getting involved more. It's still very, very difficult to win, though.
And one player who's confirmed, and I just love her story, and I know we've talked about her before, so you won't dwell on it, is Jessica Pegula. I love her story. You know, it happened a little bit later. She has worked so hard. I've asked her in person where the consistency comes from, and she doesn't know, but she's such a good talker. You know, she can talk. One of those players that can talk about anything. She's got other interests outside. She got married recently. I think she's fabulous. She goes about her business, and she's always there. She might not always be getting the headlines, but she is always, as of the last year or so, in the mix. I mean, she's been outstanding on big stages at big moments, and I'm really glad. I just keep saying I'm really glad they're all there, but I'm really glad that she's.
Yeah, I think for Pegula, she's I don't know. She's just an interesting character, isn't she? It's just not flashy. Nothing about her is flashy at all. The game style's not flashy. I mean, the personality's brilliant. I mean, she's incredibly engaging, but it's not particularly flashy. She doesn't necessarily get flashy big wins. But as you say, just has been so consistent through the season to be the third player to qualify. And you think, you know, there's only three players that have qualified. And Świątek, obviously, just total domination. Onjabur, two slam finals. So for Jessie Pegula to be in there and be the only one confirmed at this stage with 2 weeks to go is amazing.
So we've still got those places to be decided. As I say, by the time people listen to this, things might have been decided. But let's have a word on the men. So insofar, Alcaraz, Nadal. Congratulations to the Nadals, baby boy. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Rude. Tsitsipas, Djokovic, and the is Djokovic going to Australia or not thing is starting to surface. The Australian Open have said, look, we can't get involved. There's a new government. We shall wait and see what happens there. We don't believe anything will change in terms of a vaccination status for the player. So that is something I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more as it approaches. But in terms of Chirin, so that the chasing pack, Medvedev, Rublev, Fritz, Felix Auger-Aliassime, and Hubert Hurkacz. And Fritz, I mean, you know, if we stick with Americans for a little bit, what about Fritz and the year Fritz is having?
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. I mean, there's a big group of Americans, isn't there? But Fritz has just been so solid. He's broken into the top 10. Can you believe it? Oh, it's amazing. It's really good that he's backed it up. And that top 10 is a crowded place. It's not easy to get in there. It's slightly easier when somebody like Djokovic vacates, but for various reasons. But he has he snuck in there, and you know, it was so well deserved. I mean, I don't know. It's just, this is such a feel good podcast. I think it's because it's the end of the season, and we just want everyone
to be
happy.
Saying, I'm happy for everyone. No. Yeah, I'm just I'm really happy for everyone. It looks, I'm just looking at how things stand at the moment. So in fifth place, four confirmed, Medvedev, then Rublev, then Fritz, then Auger-Aliassime, then Hurkacz. Djokovic, we know, is confirmed. Zverev, no. And then Norrie. So I don't know, maybe Norrie could, I don't know, maybe probably just, maybe as alternate, maybe just missed out. Maybe that's just a little bit, it just seems the competition's a little bit too strong ahead of him. But what's happening with Medvedev at the moment? It's, I can't sort of figure out.
Well, I don't think anyone could figure out what happened in that match against Djokovic. Absolutely bizarre.
Yeah, in the final. Just said, that's it, I'm
Djokovic
done.
Had no idea either. He didn't know what was going on. He just won the second set, was roaring away as he does. And what I found fascinating, actually, moving away from Medvedev, because I can't explain it to you. I don't know what it is. Do you know what he was doing?
He obviously felt he couldn't go on, but there is that thing with Medvedev in the past, when things haven't been going his way, they can fall away pretty quickly. And we've been through such a spell of everything turning to gold and looking fabulous. And this year's just been a little bit up and down. There's some injuries at the start. It seems there's been a little bit of fitness worries in there as well. So no, in terms of as things, but he does have that mentality of old, when things weren't going right, there can be a quick out. But look, still very much up there, but it's a bit of a head scratcher, so I have no answers.
Yeah, so I don't know. We just have to wait and see, to see what he does next. I can't remember what I was going to say. Oh, yes, Djokovic. In that match,
yes.
The reaction from Djokovic was so fascinating. He did not, like, you know, a lot of the time when opponents quit, you get the, oh, no, you know, obviously there's a little bit of concern, and then it's just like, he got through. I think it was this week, it was Manuel Guinart of France, in Gijon. He came through against Fabio Fognini, who, why on earth he's not playing the 250 in Florence? I don't know what's gone on there, but he decided to come to Gijon. Anyway, and Guinart came through after Fognini retired, and he just acted like just this big smile celebration, just like, it was so cool. It was quite funny. But Djokovic, he did not want Medvedev to retire. He knows that if he wants to win slams, to get to where he's got to, you've got to go full on with these players. You've got to come through those tough three setters. He just won the second set, looking good to win it in three. And he was like, oh, come on, man. Like, you're not going to play. I thought it was a really fascinating insight into the mind of a champion.
And I think he wants the matches. He wants the time on court. So that was the semi-finals, beat Tsitsipas in the final. Djokovic, two titles in a row. And I know we know the rankings are, as they are, a mixture of Wimbledon and no points, and Djokovic not being able to play certain tournaments. But for me, he is still the player to beat. Djokovic, he's the one.
Well, he's number one in the world, isn't he? Whilst not being ranked number one in the world,
basically.
I think.
Yes.
Yeah,
he is. And look, he's going to be at the Tour Finals in Turin. I think that's going to be fascinating. They're all going to be there together. Nadal, I always wonder if he's going to turn up. He doesn't need to go to Turin. He's not that interested in that. So I know he's just become a dad. He's on paternity leave. But I don't know. Nadal, he doesn't need it, does he, Djerin? There's nothing, I don't think, for Nadal to gain for going to the Tour Finals. Would that be fair?
Well, there is. He's never won it. So I think there is plenty for him to gain, because he would tick that box. That would be nice.
Do you think he's going to keep playing forever just so he wins the Tour Finals? He doesn't feel like that kind of fella, does he?
No, I don't think he's that bothered by it. But I'm just saying that would be nice if he could go and win it comfortably. It would be fine. But it's tough at the end of the season. We know it's tough. We're seeing a lot of players looking pretty weary, and as you're saying, he's just become a dad. I don't know. I don't know how that changes. I think it's different for everyone, how it changes your perspective and your motivations and that sort of thing. So, we'll just have to wait and see.
Hey, look, if it's a baby that doesn't sleep, maybe he will be in Turin, because he'll be like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually have to go and play this tournament. What, the one you said you weren't going to do? No, I just think I'll go and play this tournament.
He starts appearing every 2:50 on the calendar.
just need a little bit of extra tennis. Do you really? Do you? So congratulations. I think we're all feeling a little bit weary. I sound a little bit weary. You've got a lot going on at the moment. I've got Halloween approaching. No, it's not my favourite time of year. You know it's not. I'm actually away working the week before, but I come back joyously on Halloween. Oh, I was hoping I could avoid it, but unfortunately not. And I've actually, for our Christmas special, if we're doing such a thing, I keep calling it a Christmas special, I think, the hardest flag in the world to identify. Now, the fact that I'd never seen this flag before means nothing, because...
A nation's flag?
Yeah, outside of the flags that we all should know, which I do know, I think, this is one that I have never laid eyes on before. I did Google what is the hardest flag to identify in the world. And so don't Google that, because you find the same flag.
Okay, I won't.
So I found it. So I know today I've got a rush dealing with children with bugs. I'm going to go and get them checked out and see how they are. And you've still got movie set, film set stuff to do and tennis to cover. But yes, I have a flag in mind that is said to be the most difficult flag in the world to identify.
That is very exciting. Yeah. I cannot wait.
So don't Google it. Promise?
Okay, promise.
And look at...
No, I'm excited for the challenge. I'm going to be Djokovic about this. Come on, bring it on.
Yeah, I mean, I failed in the quiz last week when you asked me a question. I didn't know the answers. So now it's your turn. So that is something to look forward to. But we've got, tennis continues and so much going on. And in the meantime, I've got to go and sort one of the twins out to see if we can get him back to full health.
Sounds good. Good luck.
Thank you. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye.